Thank you for tuning in to Aster Investment Management's podcast series. A reminder to our listeners that a lot of the economic data and commentary is available on our smartphone app in the iOS and Android App Store. Just search Aster Research and download it today. This week, we are joined by our Chief Executive Officer, Rob Stein, Chief Investment Officer, John Eckstein, and Senior Managing Director, Mac O'Brien, discuss the current economic outlook in the era of COVID-19. Thank you all for joining us today.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Aster's Economic Week in Review. We've had a special guest for the past couple of months, John Eckstein, CIO of Aster Investment Management. John, thanks for joining us again. How are you?
I'm good, Mac. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And as we talked a lot about last week, we've been looking forward to this podcast a lot because Rob Stein, my boss and the CEO and founder of Aster Investment Management, is joining us as well. Rob, what's happening?
Hey, Mac. Glad to be on here today.
Great. So with this podcast, we're going to follow really kind of our normal flow of the data points that we talk about. And then Rob's going to add some color and some things he's been watching. So John, high-level view, what are we talking about this week and what's happening right now?
So I guess the high-level view I sort of want to talk about today is stagnation, a new round of stagnation from the southern wave of cases. So that's sort of the new thing. I still keep my same framework of suppression versus recession, but the suppression phase, I mean, I guess this fits sort of uneasily the suppression phase, but there definitely seems to be a reduction in economic activity in the last 2 or 3 weeks.
Rob, what are the main points that you've noticed over the past, not so much this week, but, you know, the past month or so that you're excited to talk about today?
I'm always trying to connect the dots between the Fed activity, the lending facility, the direct payments to consumers, and seeing the correlation between market activity and whether we're going to see it in consistent economic activity, GDP and employment trends not being as volatile. And a lot of it is flowing into the real estate market, retail sales, as John pointed out. You see sales reaching levels that we haven't seen in many years in the housing market. Lending activity is up. It's a very robust. Mortgage applications and refinances, I think they're up over 100% from where they were at this point. A year ago, they're up 5-ish% from where they were last month. And so that's sort of pointing to where some of this liquidity is going. And if it's going to have that domino effect, you buy a new house, you buy a new refrigerator, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm trying to just connect the dots on, is that permanent? Is that going to show up consistently throughout the data?
Yeah, that's great. Interesting. Let's start with where we always start, which is the labor market. We had jobless claims. Today is Thursday, July 16th. Jobless claims came out this morning. They hit at around 1.3-ish million on the actual number, which is right in line with the consensus estimate, which is right in line with where it was last week. I mean, gentlemen, what are we thinking here? First, John, what's the pandemic unemployment assistance number for this week? Is it roughly the same as last week?
Okay, well, there's actually two things we need to talk about there. And the first is that you don't want to be looking at the seasonally adjusted data right now in terms of the jobless claims. And that's because, and there's normal seasonal effects, like, okay, jobless claims are maybe 20% higher than normal in July because like there's some seasonal stuff that you're don't realize happens around the beginning of July. But that's not the case right now, right? Like, it's not really plausible to think that there's a 20% increase in jobless claims because of stuff that happens around the 4th of July, right? We're going to look at unadjusted initial claims, and we're also going to add the pandemic unemployment insurance to that. And if you add those numbers together, they're unchanged for about 3 weeks at about 2.4 million. And they're up from about 2.25 million in the middle of June. So there is no improvement in jobless claims when you look at them the correct way.
Yeah. And we talk about that trend, right? And the trend being so important. And if you take everything into consideration, you're not seeing a downward trend in jobless claims that we would like to see. Rob, anything with the labor market? You know, in the past, we've talked about, of course, the underemployment, but what are you watching right now?
So Mac and John and I have talked about this too. The volatility is unprecedented in these numbers. Once upon a time, we would either forecast or look at consensus of jobless claims, unemployment rates, et cetera. And if you got it off by 50,000, you know, you had your tail between your legs. And now we're talking about seven-figure ranges between expectations. And so, as John pointed out, we're starting to find whether or not we're having some consistency in these numbers and they're not banging around from a million higher to a million lower. And I think it's going to be important, particularly for the way we look at the world, you know, trying to find a consistent trend.
So one thing else I'd like to talk about in terms of what's going on with the labor market. So the Census Department is doing a sort of special survey, and they've got, you know, much better survey abilities than most people. And they're doing a special employment survey called the Consumer Pulse Survey. And it's just been going on for the pandemic. And what that shows, and they ask a lot of questions about, you know, how's it going? And what that shows is that it looks like there's a net loss of 2 million, 2.5 million jobs in the last 3 weeks in terms of the number of people who are employed overall. So that, just for reference, that if you use that same number, it picked up the improvement in jobs in the previous 2 months, right? So it was up 4 or 5 million in the previous 2 months. And this, so it's, you know, going the right direction. It's not just a consensus number that's way, way wrong. And that's showing a loss of 2-ish million jobs as a, since the last employment reference week. You know, because what we've seen is, like Rob was pointing out, the volatility, and we've seen, you know, 1 month there's 8 million jobs added and 5 million jobs lost for a net gain of 3 million jobs. And that's just so big that it's hard to know what's going on. But it looks like if these numbers are right, the net job gains, the huge job gains that we've seen the last 2 months, is not going to repeat for July's number, which will be released in the beginning of August.
But John, that's a good word, repeat, because one of the challenges is these numbers being so pinned that you're not going to repeat some of the patterns that we had a month ago or 2 months ago. You're not going to have another 100% gain in mortgage applications. There's only so many millions of people who are going to possibly come back to work, or millions of people that continue to get laid off. And I think that's one of the challenges. The timely data, the flash data, is certainly giving us a picture, and we're doing a great job. You're doing a great job of pointing to those, whether restaurant reservations or gas usage, etc. But at some point, we've had such huge amounts of consumer spending basically stopping, employment trends stopping, starting, that I think looking at the more timely data to create the pattern, not the magnitude, is probably what we're going to start seeing very soon.
Yeah, Rob, with that, let's somewhat shift into what you mentioned at the beginning, which is retail numbers. They've been very strong in terms of the different data that's come out on retail spending. This week, I think they came out today, right? And we had some pretty strong retail numbers. You were kind of pointing to the stimulus and what the Fed's been doing. Why don't you walk us through that side of the equation and what you see happening in retail sales? Break it down for us.
Yeah, so, you know, consumer spending is a big chunk of economic activity. You know, it was a record, or close to a record, but again, bouncing off of basic, as John put it, you know, stagnating economy. It just was shut down. And there was a study done, I think it was way back in the 80s, that the consumer getting an extra dollar in their pocket, they tend to spend $1.10. And so we're seeing somewhat of a magnified effect from the money put into the system, direct payments in consumer spending and retail sales. Again, I'm not expecting that to continue, certainly not at this pace, especially with the employment benefits winding down over the next couple of weeks. It's clearly given a shot in the arm to the economy, the bridge that I've talked about in the past, but we're still uncertain as to whether this can continue at this pace.
Yeah, so I guess I would add to that, like if you look at the retail sales, you strip out the gasoline sales because they're, one, they're very subject to gasoline prices, and two, you know, we know we're not moving as much as we used to. The retail
that pushed
sales,
the number up. That pushed the number up.
Retail sales ex gas is at a new high, new all-time high, and pretty close to its trend before the recession. And it's interesting to look at, you know, where that is coming from, right? There's a few areas that are up on last year and also up on last month, and that's things like motor vehicle sales and sporting goods. But there's a couple things there's a bunch of things which are up on last month but still way down on last year, and that's things like clothing and furniture and department store sales and stuff like that. So,
you know, I tried to buy a bike for my son over the
oh yeah there's no bike.
No bikes.
You're not gonna get a bike. You might as well try to get a Peloton.
There's right. No bikes. There's no basketball hoops for your driveway. There's no, I mean, anything that has to do with keeping your kids busy. It's pretty much backordered at this point.
It is, Mac. And I think that people are then buying something else. I don't believe that once upon a time you couldn't get something, you'd save or you'd wait. You don't walk out of the bike store without something, roller skates, whatever it is. And so it continues to add to retail sales and consumer spending.
I think as Rob was pointing out, it's good to emphasize that like the reason consumer sales are holding up is because of the direct fiscal support people have been getting from the government, right? And that is right now, so one big chunk was the stimulus checks, right? So there's no more stimulus checks coming. The next big chunk would be the extra $600 that people have been getting for a week, people been getting for unemployment insurance. And that has basically all been spent, right? That's what's holding up the economy right now. That's set to expire with next week's payments. And so right now the Senate is expecting to have something in next week on like Tuesday, but nobody knows what it is. And we'll see. I mean, I'm very hopeful that they're going to extend that payment indefinitely. And the third piece would be the pandemic unemployment insurance. And that is still safe until December. That's going to go until December.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, John, we were talking earlier, John, about bank deposits. The top, I don't know, 4 or 5 banks have almost $5 trillion of deposits on hand. That's a lot. And I think that could also have an additional stimulative effect as they either have to deploy a piece of it or even put it to work in the overnight market. And that's a direct connection. It's not just spending. It all ends up back in the banking system. And so what that is pointing out to me is the magnitude of the stimulus and the spending. $5 trillion of deposits. Can't even say the number.
Rob and I started in this business. Rob started in the 80s. I started in the early 90s. And there used to be something called the money supply, which no one's ever heard of anymore. But that measures the amount of money in circulation. That number's off the charts, just off the charts, like way.
Thursdays at 3:00, stand by.
Yeah, I know a guy who got a standing ovation for getting a money supply absolutely right once at Solomon Brothers, and like
John, we're dating ourselves. I don't even think people remember Solomon Brothers.
Anyway, the money supply, usually the change in the money supply, which is checking accounts, cash in circulation. Money market funds, stuff like that, stuff that's basically super, super liquid, usually ranges between 5% and 7% year on year change. And now it's, 24% year on year change, unprecedented. And I see that.
Rob, at the beginning, we talked about retail sales a little bit just now, and you mentioned furniture sales not being equal to maybe some e-commerce or some sporting goods. Let's take that as a segue to talk about mortgage or real estate, mortgage applications. You mentioned that you were watching some things pretty closely on that. So I'll kind of throw it over to Rob to talk about the real estate market right now, both local and in major metropolitan areas, as well as nationwide.
So the real estate market is in an interesting spot. You have a lot of people who are getting out of Dodge, whether they're going to the suburbs or states that have perhaps lower incidences or quality of life. And so you're seeing refinancing, of course, happening at a very, very high pace, spiking up from over 100% where it was a year ago. And you're also seeing, and this is telling, that the refinances of entire mortgages are well over 60%. So as we talked about before, low interest rates is driving a large part of that. But you're also having home sales spike as well and reaching levels that we haven't seen in quite a while. And that's also very telling of the entire situation, not just lower rates, not just pent-up demand. I think it's a combination of all the things that we've discussed earlier today.
And Rob, break it down. Does refinancing dramatically help the economy or any particular facet of the economy? Or is it, I always looked at it as like new home application. People are buying new homes is what I thought was really important. And where does refi applications fall into that?
Well, that helps your disposable income, hopefully. That's the reason you're refinancing, and you get a lower rate, your monthly nuts a little lower, and you have more to spend, or in some cases, pay off debt. So that helps stimulate the economy as well. But you're right, Mac, it's not the same as buying a new home where all the durable goods are purchased as well.
Or just,
you know, I think you could also hope that, like, whoever that somebody's spending that money with, right? So you save $500 a month on your mortgage, where you're going to spend that, it has a much higher, you know, multiplier effect than the bank, right? You give your money back to the bank, it just sits there, right? But if you give the money to the grocer, he goes to the tailor, who goes to the blacksmith, or whatever.
The blacksmith, I love it.
I'm thinking Richard Scarry. Richard Scarry is how I understand finance.
Guns and butter.
So yeah, to echo those comments, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with mortgage applications moving forward. I was watching whatever news outlet was this morning, and we dip below 3 for the first time in a 30-year. And I think that as that gets more press and people start reading that and they realize that it is such a good time to maybe make that purchase or make that big decision, you know, we'll see how that affects applications moving forward. Because there's like any pricing, you know, a widget in the store, when you get below a certain threshold, now I'm seeing on the news 2.99, 2.98 and a 30-year. I mean, those are big, even though it's just a couple percentage points or basis points down from 3.05 or whatever it is. It could be that visual that starts getting people to really get off the couch and again, make that big decision.
I think every move down does help. But I think, you know, as we've been saying for so much of the crisis, like, we have to get the virus under control to get the economy back, right? Like, if people are worried about, you know, another wave in Illinois, they're not going to buy a house. And so, like, we need to, job one has got to get the virus under control.
Yeah. So, John, I just toss it over to you. Why don't you start with the high frequency stuff?
Right. So, you know, I said I'm seeing stagnation now on the very high frequency stuff, right? So the stuff that we have basically daily or weekly. And so a couple things I see no change in the last 30 days would be the JP Morgan releases how much their consumers are spending. And that is no change over the last 30 days. TSA security clearances has no change over the last 3 weeks or so. That had been showing a very standard, both of these had been showing big recoveries from May. If you look at the Dallas Fed has what they call a mobility and engagement index, where they're basically they take the data from 10 million cell phones and how long are they staying at the store, or are they going to work, whatever. So that is stagnating for the last 3 months. The hotel occupancy is stagnating for the last 3 weeks. The open table, the dining numbers are stagnating for the last 3 weeks. So, you know, I think the natural explanation is the southern wave of the virus, right? Mm-hmm. And so people are, whether or not they go back into phase one or red alert or whatever, people are staying home because they see on TV what's happening. And, you know, it seems like we are, you know, weeks away from that improving at best. And so I don't know that we can expect these to go back down, but the improvement that we have seen, you know, since April or May seems to have dissipated the way I read the numbers.
Yeah, I was reading this morning on hotel occupancy, and it was actually falling quite dramatically in the major areas that are seeing or being reported on the increase in COVID cases, Florida, New York, Illinois, et cetera. And hotel occupancy was rising rapidly.
Don't talk about New York. We're good.
Yeah.
Florida,
Idaho, and Dakotas, Montana.
Idaho is actually a hot spot. You watch Idaho has to watch
Idaho. Idaho was sort of ground zero.
Idaho's a hot spot. But I think Arizona, Texas, Florida, California, Southern California, all probably seeing a lot less tourism given what's going on there.
Yeah. And Rob, every week, at least for the past 3 weeks, John and I kind of always kind of fall back. Maybe it's because I bring it up because I'm quasi-obsessed with it. But the second and third order effects is what usually causes a recession, right? It's not the company or the business going out of business that causes it. It's the, as John likes to put it, it's the linen supplier of the restaurant then going out of business. And then the dry cleaner going out of business that doesn't clean the linens anymore. Rob, you worked on the Fed under Volcker. You've been in this business for quite some time. When you see these second and third order effects being delayed, essentially because of the Fed stimulus, which you mentioned earlier, are you concerned that the second and third order effects are going to hit us all at once? Or what are your opinion on that and how it's going to factor in and ripple into the health of the economy?
Right. So clearly those are factors that trickle through and they create the pattern, you know, clearly. And it's not just the initial shock or the initial layoff. It's then, you know, the guy running the food truck from the construction site that shut down. But it's also, I'm going to probably talk more long-term positive. Because of the delay, I think that gives the economy time to find new pockets. And I'm not smart enough to know what those new pockets are or what industries are going to be hiring in the middle of a pandemic. I mean, you can look at the obvious ones. But when there's this delay, it gives you a chance to prepare. And so I think it's going to help slow down the entire impact. It's going to have entrepreneurs and people get more creative. You're going to have a little bit more liquidity when you see the ancillary effect, whether it's the linen provider and so on and so forth. Max, short answer is this rolling delay in this particular environment, I think will make people more prepared.
That's a good point. Great point.
I think that's right. And it's also going to, again, not to harp on the same thing, but with the extensive amount of sort of direct-to-consumer support we've been giving, that's making people, even who lose their jobs, you know, reduce their spending somewhat less than they would otherwise.
You know, Mick, John, it's interesting. The savings rate has gone up.
Savings rate is through the roof, right? And that's not good news, right? That's bad news, right? Savings rate is through the roof because people are scared. That's like depression level savings. That's bad. You got to go spend that money, but they're not going to when they're so worried. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Aster Economic Week in Review podcast completist, we'll remember when we talked about the savings rate and the personal income, which actually went up net April, May. We don't have June's numbers yet. It'll be a little less because the stimulus payment is not in, which was goosed up April, May. But the actual spending, the actual money in people's pockets went up.
Yeah, that's not too inconsistent with what happens during recessions either, John, right?
Yeah, well, people do definitely so, right. So risk aversion increases in recessions and people want to be a little bit more defensive. That's definitely true. Rob, before we go, do you want to talk about how you're seeing or wondering if we're going to see, you know, a new model of the economy, something fundamentally shifting after COVID?
Sure, I'd be happy to. And John, I always enjoy when we go out on a philosophical scale. And I do think that this is a paradigm shift. You have social, political, and economic issues coming to a head at the exact same time. And that generally causes change. And then I go back to all the way back to Adam Smith and capitalism and how the economy is structured and looking at the stock market and looking at the uneven performance in the stock market. It must be telling some type of story because I do think capital and labor getting together, entrepreneurism and developing an economy that employs more people, that has greater output is what's going to happen eventually. Again, not smart enough to know why, what, or how, but we talked about the Industrial Revolution when we were talking about our exciting things and how when 80%+ of the economy was in farming and people thought, oh my, it's over now when efficiencies became there. I think this is similar to that. We just don't have the vision of what it is, but I do think that we're going to enter into a new period, and this isn't tomorrow or even next year, but perhaps this decade, where we have fundamental shifts in how employment trends and output trends are finding their efficiencies that grow the economy, have higher employment, better standard of living, and more of these social issues behind us or identified and a path to rectify. I think that's going to happen. I think that's the silver lining in all of this, and I look forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely true that a time like this is when fundamental things can be shifted, right? It's like we never would have thought like everyone could stay home for 30 days. And so now we can, and people are going to unlearn the lesson of like, wow, a lot of white collar stuff can be done at home just fine. At least 4 days out of five, everyone's going to be fine. So I think some patterns of work are going to change. And if you look at some of the polling numbers for some social issues, you've got really unusual shifts in the way people are thinking about stuff in a new way. But people are shifting radically in a very, very short period of time. And so how far that'll extend, I don't think you can know.
For sure. And as we talked about yesterday, when you have political, economic, and social issues coming to a head, that generally succeeds in having change.
Yep. And so by the market's divergence, I think we should just point out, I think you meant the difference between, say, the leading six or the leading mega cap tech stocks and the rest of the stock market, right? The rest of the stock market is sort of even. the leading mega cap tech stocks are up strongly. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, and even if you get a little more broad with growth and value, small cap, mid cap, large cap, but you're right, it's most easily identified in the big 5, 6, 7 names. And it's not even saying that those are the winners and there's where we go. It's just picking something right now or throwing something out. But there's going to be other stocks that solve issues that we can't identify. And those will be the ones that drag the economy and the market to the next level.
Yeah, I agree.
John, we talked about a few weeks ago that the next coming wave is more likely to impact higher wage earners, maybe even white collar. And large contributors to the economy will have a exponential impact on the next economic slowdown. And the data and the flash data, I think, are going to pick that up. And that's what worries me. We found that we can work from home, but there are some occupations that can't work from home for longer than 30 days. There are certain jobs that are less efficient working at home. And when you start to have challenges in the higher paying jobs, I think that will have headwind on the continued growth, certainly in the markets and maybe in the rebound.
I think that's true, though. Honestly, one of the best things for the economy could be more, a more egalitarian society, right? If we're seeing just in terms of who spends the money that they have, the poor people have a much higher propensity to spend, and they'll get more money. Just have the feeling that in the last 5 or 15 or 20 years, a lot of the money that gets spent ends up getting locked up and not recirculated, invested mm-hmm. in PE funds or buying mm-hmm. battleship sized yachts or islands or whatever. Or
it doesn't circulate. Fancy works of art.
Yeah, exactly. And it just sits there. And I feel this has been a really interesting test in just sending people checks, right? And I don't think we're going to keep sending people checks forever, but it's been interesting. And if the political climate changes and we end up giving people more support, I can totally see how that would be a net good to the economy, even though people are going to say, gosh, you have to have more taxes to pay for it. That's true. But I could still imagine a certain scenario where it was a net positive.
Agreed. John, I'm going to take a ride on your battleship size yacht.
I'll be the captain, man. You need a deckmate? I can wash the floors.
And Mac, you can come look at my new Matisse, and we can be blamed for not having capital and cash circulate through the economy.
Yeah. Okay. So, hey guys, that was great. Let's wrap it up with what's on tap for next week. John, what do we have to look forward to?
Next week, we've got the University of Michigan sentiment numbers out tomorrow. We're excited about that. We've got some housing numbers. We said that we're going to keep watching those, jobless claims, and then the leading economic indicators I always like to keep an eye on. So another exciting week.
That's awesome. Everyone, tune in next week. Rob will be a more frequent guest with us, sometimes maybe filling in for myself or maybe John or vice versa. Guys, thanks a lot for taking time today. Awesome insights. And thank you for listening. If you haven't subscribed, please do share it with your friends. And everyone have a great, safe weekend. See you guys.
Thanks, Mac.
Bye-bye.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.